like The Little Mermaid, we just cast an African-American girl to play Ariel. And there was an uproar about that because she's not the Caucasian red-haired girl that we know from the cartoon. And, you know, you kind of have to tell people, like, first of all, mermaids are not real. Second of all, you know, who's to say that, you know, we can't create a different world and tell the same story and include, you know, different races, different genders and ethnicities into these roles. And it came down to, you know, they saw thousands of girls to play Ariel, and they just couldn't find someone that could sing, that could act, and that had just had that kind of star quality. So when we cast her, you know, it was really taking a chance, and you know, it might have pissed off a lot of people, but I think that we're breaking these stereotypes and these boundaries.
This time on the Plutopia News Network, casting coordinator Alexandra Alvarez joins John and Scoop in the virtual studio. We discuss filmmaking during COVID-19 and her desire to address issues such as stereotyping and diversity.
Welcome to the Plutopia Podcast. Our guest today is Alexandra Alvarez, also known as Alex Alvarez. She's from Austin originally, but she's currently living in Los Angeles and working as a casting coordinator for the Walt Disney Studios and 20th Century Fox. And she's also doing some independent casting for CBS television. So she made a big change in her life when she moved out to California. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So welcome, Alex.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me. I'm very, very excited.
Yeah.
This is my first podcast I've ever been on. So.
Oh, really?
I don't really know what to expect, but I'm ready.
Well, I mean, we'll just talk about kind of the big change that you made. What made you move from Austin to Los Angeles? Did you already knew you were going to get into casting specifically?
I didn't. So I was living in Texas for my whole life, and I kind of got stuck in a rut. I was waiting tables. I was going to school, and I always wanted to work in the industry, but it was always so far, and it was such like a pipe dream for me. I never thought I could do it. And then one day I called my mom. I was going through a rough patch. 2016 was a very rough year for me, based on some personal stuff that happened. And I called my mom one day and I was like, I'm moving to LA. And she's like, with who? I was like, by myself. I'm going to move to LA and figure it out and start over. And she thought I was crazy, but she took a chance and, you know, she helped me go out there. We went out there to visit. We found an apartment, a very expensive studio apartment.
Wow.
And I just started applying for jobs out there. No experience. I applied for probably 40 to 50 jobs with nothing. And, you know, my parents were supporting me and they were like, we can't do this much longer. Like, you're a grown adult. Get it together.
So come back to Austin. Did you do the traditional thing of working as a barista or something out there?
And yes, the job? For a little bit. I was waiting tables for a little bit. And, you know, everyone out there is an actor and they're all trying to be famous. I was like, I want to work behind the scenes. Like, I want to be a part of that world. And I went to a bar one night after work and this gentleman was like, I started talking to him and he told me, oh yeah, we're hiring for production assistants over at NBC. Universal. And he's like, you should come down and, you know, I'll give you their information. So he hooked me up. I got that job. I worked there for probably 2 months. And at the time I didn't understand how, it's not a contracted. It's not like I'm going to work there every day for like however many years until I put my 2 weeks notice in. It was like, once the show's over, once the show's wrapped, everyone's out of a job. So I didn't understand that. And once my job was over, I was like, what am I going to do now? Like, you know, until the next show pops up, everyone's out of work. So I kept applying for jobs. And one of my friends was like, you should go work as a background extra at Central Casting. And I didn't understand what she was saying. And I was like, okay. So I just went to Central Casting's website. I was like, oh, careers. Maybe this is what she was talking about. So I applied for an assistant position with Central Casting. she thought, you know, I was going to go be a background extra, but instead I went and applied for an office position with them. And I got the job with what little experience I had. I moved my way up there and I started, you know, I worked as an assistant for about a year and a half. And then I was promoted to a casting director for some smaller projects.
So let me ask one thing. So you got the job. Do you have any idea? I mean, it's really hard to break into this industry. Do you have any idea why they gave you the job, considering that you weren't experienced?
You know, I think that they kind of just took a chance on me, which that's a very good question. You know, I went to the interview and I called my mom afterwards. I was like, there was no way I got that. I'm so inexperienced. But they ended up calling me and I got the job. And, you know, the same thing kind of happened with Disney. When I applied for Disney, you know, extras casting is vastly different than principal casting. It's two different worlds and they don't really like each other. So transitioning into principal casting was really difficult too, because, you know, everyone's like, oh, you're in background casting. It's not the same. It's a completely different world versus working with real talent. And, you know, my current boss really just took a chance on me. And she even said that. She was like, I appreciate your, you know, enthusiasm, your work effort and your passion for it. And she's like, we're going to go out on a whim here and see what happens. So I'm hoping that that's what happened at Central Casting too, that they just knew that I wanted it so badly. I wanted to be in the world of, you know, entertainment somehow. And I just got really lucky.
So you were saying as a kind of interim thing, you got into being a casting director, but for some fairly small projects. Was that like television?
Yeah, they were small television projects. A couple of them were just pilots. So just like the first episode of a new series that was starting. And when that was for the extras casting, and extras casting, you know, you're just hiring the day players that go to set each day, depending on what the director needs for the next day.
So when you're doing that, do people just kind of show up in person and you interview them, or are you doing that by like reviewing picked images and text files and that sort of thing?
Yeah. So we actually at Central Casting, they have a database full of actors. As a background actor, what you do at Central Casting is you and I, or if you have some friends, you can go register with Central Casting and they'll take your headshot, all your measurements. If you have different costumes or looks that you want to have on file, like a businessman or like police officer, stuff like that, they can take those photos. And then basically they have an incredible system to where we can kind of tailor based on size, height, weight, you know, how long your hair is, the color of your hair, and we can kind of narrow down and find what we're looking for. And then we'll reach out to the actors directly.
Well, did your initial interview experience getting into the industry influence the way you handle your interviews on your job now, your approach?
Yeah, absolutely. It's my job interview at Central Casting. My boss was very serious, very stoic, and almost very like tough. And I was like, I was so scared. I went out of that interview. I was like, there's no way I got that. She was just very poker face the whole time. And now my current job at Disney, when I went in, my boss was so relaxed and, you know, confident and like, you know, made me feel really, really comfortable. So, and it's interesting because Disney's such a family friendly, you know, company. I think that they really kind of encompass that whole, like making people feel comfortable. So I think working at Disney is much more relaxed and like not as, I guess, scary as working at Central Casting.
And Disney is also 20th Century Fox now, right?
Yes. So Disney, they've taken over 20th Century Fox, ABC, and Searchlight. So there's a lot of, lots of stuff going on.
Lots
right
of
now.
Projects, yeah.
Yeah. I think we're at about 40 active current projects.
And you're not doing background anymore. You're doing your main talent.
No, I'm still able to help hire, you know, point people in the direction of, you know, how to end up getting those background actors. And, you know, it's such a, for as big of a production as the entertainment industry is, it's really like a small circle of people. So
it's what do you have to consider when you're in casting? I mean, how do you find the talent and assess what's the best fit?
Yeah. So a lot of talent, the bigger names will go through agents. They'll have agents will pitch ideas to actors for us. My boss, say we get a role, my boss will immediately, she's a brilliant woman. She's able to just kind of generate lists of hundreds of actors for one role. And I don't really know how she does it. She'll just email me a long list. She's like, hey, can you compile these together? Like, I want these people. I want to reach out to their agents for this role. And I think over time, your mind just kind of sees people and like picks up on patterns and stuff and is able to pick out who's good for what role. But a lot of the time too, you know, right now we're casting for something very, very specific and we're having a hard time finding it. So I'm on Instagram, on TikTok, I'm on YouTube, like trying to find any talent or, you know, newbies. And she's like, they don't need agents. They don't need to have ever acted a day in their life. Like, we'll bring on a new person. So there's definitely always that opportunity to find some new talent. You know, not everyone has to be Brad Pitt.
Without naming names, have you encountered some requests for casting that were really strange? Are really challenging?
Oh yes, absolutely. Right now, I won't name names, but right now we're looking for a 6'11", 16-year-old who is of Nigerian and Greek descent. So that's been a challenge. And then, of course, you know, we're casting this, the young version of him, the 16-year-old, and then we need the adult version of him, which, of course, is going to be in your maybe 7 feet to 7'2" range. It's a basketball player. But it's, you know, we have right now, we have casting teams in Greece. We have casting teams in South Africa looking for this. And those are casting teams that we hire to come onto the projects and kind of be our eyes and ears out there because we can't physically be over there.
So you would have to do some preliminary research to try to figure out how would somebody look if they were of both Nigerian and Greek descent, right?
Right. Yeah. And then it comes down to like the accents and can they act and, you know, do they want to? I thought I found our guy. I found him on Instagram. I reached out to him. I was like, you know, Walt Disney Studios would love you to put in a self tape for this. He says, no, I'm not interested. I was like, no, you're perfect.
We were in a sandwich store here in Austin one time with my wife's parents. And a guy walked up to her dad. It turns out this guy was Eagle Pinnell, who was a pretty well-known film director back then.
Yeah.
And he wanted him for a movie and really just kind of begged him to agree to be in this movie. And her dad would have nothing of it. He didn't want to have anything to do with it. We were sitting there saying, do it, you know?
Yeah.
And the movie turned out to be the whole shooting match, which was actually a pretty well-received movie. And it would have been really cool if he had done it. But I kind of didn't understand why he wouldn't want to, but I guess that's just from my mindset. If you asked me to be in a movie, I would do it. I wouldn't even think twice.
Right.
But I realize that some people think differently about it.
Yeah, it's kind of scary. And I think that there's a lot of challenges that come with it. And being famous that young, you know, it's a different world for sure.
When you're casting overseas, you know, for a production overseas, how different is the process in Europe or Asia compared to domestic casting?
Yeah, so the process is very similar. I think that we go through casting, we'll hire the casting directors directly and then they kind of correspond with us. Overseas, you know, my job when we do have location casting directors becomes a 24-hour job. I'm awake at like 2 or 3 a.m. answering random emails that are coming from like New Zealand or Australia or wherever. The process is pretty similar. They'll send us their choices of people that they think, and then we'll kind of narrow it down based off what they're giving us. Because of everything that's going on with COVID, we can't really bring the talent to the U.S. without having like a thorough vetting process. So it'll be a lot of self-tapes, auditions, and then just recently we've narrowed down one role and we'll do Zoom auditions, like so a live Zoom audition, and I'll be able to get the director and the producer and my boss on there versus, you know, just be my boss and the actor. So the thing is with self-tapes, you can record it a million times and submit your perfect take or edit it, or, you know, but when you're live in front of a group of people, it's a completely different audition. So we like to make sure that we have enough materials on them, and then we'll do a live audition as well.
Well, when it comes to employing foreign actors or actresses to come over here or to send American talent overseas, one of the biggest problems I used to work in the entertainment business and with musicians, and the visa process and immigration processes were the biggest challenge. Sometimes you couldn't get them over here or send our people over there. Do you encounter that a lot?
We do. It's something that we have to really stay on top of, you know, especially when we're casting like minors, because their work permits only last 4 to 6 months. So it's our job as the coordinators to kind of stay on top of that, make sure their visas are up to date, their passports are up to date. Because sometimes even the agents will be like, oh yeah, here's so-and-so's passport. And we're like, that expired 3 months ago. That's not going to help us. So it's a bunch of that. It's a bunch of like, you know, the devil is in the details with this job for sure. But luckily, you know, we do it so frequently that I haven't seen an entire shoot schedule have to be redone or anything yet. I've heard it's happened. I've heard that, you know, they were unable to get someone on a plane and they had to redo the whole thing. But luckily, knock on wood, that hasn't happened to us yet.
The you mentioned child actors, and old Hollywood kind of had a bad history with the treatment and hiring and working of underage talent, and that I understand has changed quite a bit. What's in place that you have to, you know, what authorities are in place that you have to deal with when you're dealing with underage talent?
Yeah, so generally the parent or guardian is always involved. There's at least one parent on set for them. A lot of the times the agents will come with the talent if they're minors as well as representation for them. It's rare. I actually don't think I've ever seen just a solo child just show up. But, you know, it's also a vetting process. We have to make sure that, you know, And sometimes we have these children that come in, and it's a little sad because you can tell that they don't want to be there. It was, you know, mom and dad want them to be there. But there are some children that are super passionate, super charismatic, and their parents are like, I don't know who he gets it from, but he's, you know, this is his thing. He wants to do it. So it's very interesting to watch and see the difference in the children that, you know, come in and out of our office.
I would imagine stage moms and stage dads can be a bit of a challenge without saying any names. Yeah. Have you had some extreme challenges like that?
We have. We had just recently, we had a young little boy. This was at CBS. You know, he didn't want to. He was crying. And the mom just got down on her knees and she was like, I will take you to Disneyland and get you McDonald's. Like, just like holding her child like this, like, just do this for us. And I was like, this poor, like, I felt guilty that it was my job to bring him into that room and try to, you know, force him to do that, you know. And I'm sure there's much worse stories out there of children that are forced to do work they don't want to, but I've only seen it that once where a parent was very stern and didn't, you know, it didn't feel in the child's best interest. It felt very forced, which was very sad.
So I'm wondering, from your perspective, how is the industry changing right now, especially due to COVID? I mean, we keep hearing things like the latest thing was yesterday, there was a big announcement from Warner's that they were going to they were going to start distributing all their new films through HBO as well as in the theaters. I mean, what impact does that have on your job in casting?
Yeah, so I've seen with Disney as well, we're in negotiations. There's lots of talks about taking a lot of projects that were originally supposed to be features in the theaters and moving them to Disney Plus. And then doing, I know with Mulan, we did a premiere access where they charged $30 for it. And I'm kind of back and forth on it. Like, there's movies that I will pay that much to see, but $30 is asking a lot of someone to watch it in their home, maybe on a smaller television than they would at the theater. Like, you don't pay $30 to go to the movies.
Well, a lot of those on-demand initial releases are at, like, I think $20, $19.99.
Right, yeah.
So that one was exceptionally high, I think.
Yeah. I think I see, honestly, a lot more production companies and studios going over to on-demand. I just hope, it hasn't changed the casting process at all. Before COVID, it would have. We've had before COVID, before all this happened, we'd had actors turn down films because they were going to go straight to the streaming service. They just don't do streaming because it's not considered the same, I guess. But now, because everything's switching over, they're more susceptible to do it.
It's what they use. I mean, they used to talk about direct to VHS, back when people had videotapes. So it's a similar thing, I guess. It just doesn't have the same prestige. It shows that the studio didn't have the confidence in the film to release it to theaters.
Yeah.
So
it's interesting. It's changing a lot.
Do you have a sense that people in the industry feel that they can get past this pretty well and they're not going to implode?
I hope so. Everyone's been very flexible. It's definitely a lot more work. I think at the beginning, we were all very, very excited to be working from home and this is cool. And then it gets old really quick. I would give anything to have my office back, but I think, everyone's super flexible. The creatives are coming up with, even more creative projects. And I've seen a lot of television too that are kind of basing their storylines off of either COVID or work from home or Zoom calls and stuff like that. So people are getting really creative with it, which I think is amazing.
How are they protecting? How are actors protected? They're shooting a lot of television and a lot of film now where people have to come together unmasked for the shoots. How are they protecting them?
Yeah, so there's actually my old roommate, her job was to be a COVID data analyst for all of these shows. So she kind of input the data for everyone that's getting tested. So these actors are tested every day or multiple times a day almost, before you go anywhere. I've seen that a lot of sets are fully equipped with PPE, which is great. They're kind of recasting and getting rid of some roles too, to make changing the story to make it smaller cast.
Now, when you say they're tested, does that mean like a full blown test, the nasal swab thing?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. They have a whole team there on set, taking care of that. So.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's really amazing. We've also seen some performances, where people are wearing masks and performing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this week there was a Christmas special on NBC where they had people dancing that were wearing masks. So some people were wearing masks and some people weren't. Obviously, the singers can't wear masks, really, and sing very effectively. And I noticed that on the floats in the Thanksgiving Day parade that a lot of people were wearing masks, but they would sort of segregate people who had to sing from those floats, or at least pretend to sing. It was probably lip sync, but they put them away from everybody else, like maybe at the top of the float, so that they would have that distancing. So it's like people are kind of figuring out ways to work around it.
They're getting creative. That's awesome. I love to see that.
But I think the real tricky part is just in theaters. It's really hard to get people to go to theaters. Mm-hmm. And, you know, knowing that they're going to be cooped up in a space for 2 or 3 hours, well, probably 2 hours with a bunch of other people and that they don't know, that are strangers and who could be, you know, sick.
Yeah, it's a scary thing. I think, you know, I've seen that they're renting out theaters for private parties and stuff, but still it's just like, it's kind of...
It's that would be kind of cool. Let's do that. Let's run a theater. Yeah, let's
do it. I'd be down.
Yeah, I have a friend in Hollywood does sound for TV and film, and he's a union guy, and okay. He's been approached, and a lot of his friends have been approached by a lot of, you know, formerly unknown independent producers who wanted them to come out and do something outside of the area, and it's not socially distanced, and it's a fly-by-night production. And he said it seems like that's really happening a lot more because a lot of technical people, production people, aren't getting work as much as they used to. And the lure of going out and doing these sketchy fly-by-night productions seems to be growing. Have you noticed anything like that happening in the area?
I've noticed that there have been lots of like kind of independent or short films or like, let's just pull this together happening. Not per se, I haven't seen it within the studios. The studios kind of have a very structured way of doing things with legal and HR and like everyone you can think of involved. But I have seen, you know, they're doing what they can to get their stuff out there and working in smaller crews and smaller sets just to kind of get their material out.
Did you have something, Scoop?
No.
Okay, I was going to shift gears a little bit from the actual film business and ask about your experience as a young woman from Texas moving to California and Los Angeles and what that's kind of like and how your life changed out there.
Yeah, so it's a... all the stereotypes that you hear about LA, a lot of them are very true. everyone is beautiful. Everyone is, how do I say this nicely? It's a dog eat dog out there. And, you know, moving from Texas, you know, I have this, you know, the Southern hospitality. I would let a stranger into my home kind of, you know, mentality. And out in LA, you have to be a little more careful. And I think I've definitely been burned a couple of times, but that's part of being young and learning and, you know, learning who to trust and who not to. But, you know, there are really great people in LA, but there are a lot of people that are out for themselves or out for the fame or out for, you know, they're not like, but your buddies really, and two, it's crazy, you know, with the uprising of like Instagram and TikTok and the influencers, and you can't walk down the street without seeing someone in the middle of the street taking a picture or posing or like doing the selfie or having a full blown photo shoot, you know, on Rodeo Drive. And they're all about, you know, the clout and the likes and the pictures. So all of that's very much real. It's very much LA. So it's nice to, you know, I'll never forget where I came from, and I try to come back home as much as I can to recenter myself. And, you know, I'm not out there for the fame or anything. I'm out there to work on films that I love and, you know, be in the industry as much as I can. But LA is tough at times, but I think if I can do it, anyone can do it. I think so.
You did say initially that you knew that you wanted to work in film in some way, and you knew you wanted to work in the background. How long have you been interested in doing that? Is that like been a big deal for you for years?
Yeah, I think probably since I was very young. I was always, before YouTube was around, I was like making music videos and like being silly with my brothers. And I didn't know what aspect I wanted to be in. I didn't even know I wanted to be in casting until I tried it out. I always thought that I wanted to be a director or a writer. But yeah, it started very young. And I think, you know, as I got older, it kind of, you know, it was never a realistic job to be working in the industry. And, you know, my parents were like, go to school for something that, you know, get a degree for something that you can like have a steady job for. And, you know, the entertainment industry is not very steady. You go from project to project, but luckily I ended up in a field and a position to where I can, you know, have some stability, have like a steady paycheck. I don't have to worry about where my next meal is coming from. So I got really lucky with that.
So what is your aspiration? Where would you like to be in 5 years? What would you like to be doing?
5 years from now. That's such a good question. I really love casting. I would love to see myself probably as either a staff casting director or maybe even switching into the creative aspects. You know, I have a lot of my friends in the office. I'm the only one in the casting department with my boss and my manager. So the others are the creative executives. So they're working on the scripts and the storyboards and the idea that, and I'm so fascinated with what they do. So I could definitely see myself, you know, maybe dipping my toes into their world and see what goes behind, because they essentially will present us with what they're looking for. So I would love to see the process that goes behind, you know, what they do and how they get to, you know, what they're looking for. So maybe creative. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, so that would be like maybe eventually becoming a director or something like that. Yeah. Are you aware of anybody who's gone from casting to directing?
Yes, actually, I have seen a couple people do it. It's not frequent. A lot of people kind of stay with casting because that's what they like to do. But I see myself kind of like an open book. I'll go wherever. If I landed here, who knows? Who knows where the next 5 years will take me?
So, one other thing I was going to ask you about, you're kind of an influencer yourself, right? You have your Instagram account and you have a real facility with that. Are you continuing to do a lot of social media stuff in addition to the work that you're doing?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's always fun to just like, you know, be creative and be online and even have like, I tell my friends, I was like, it's so hard keeping up with two different personalities, like who I am and then my Instagram alter ego. And it's like a joke we make with each other because, you know, the internet, all of that, none of it's really real. You know, it's kind of like a facade. So I think I have a lot of fun playing with that kind of part of myself. And you can kind of, you know, be creative and more open and not take things too seriously. So I enjoy both.
Well, if I can switch back to your work experience, mm-hmm. I was reading in your response to our request for, you know, what your aims are. And one of them is breaking stereotyping in the industry. Can you elaborate on what you've seen and what you want to see?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, especially working at Disney, a lot, you know, more recently, we've been remaking a lot of classics. And those characters have already been, you know, they're written in ink, you know, in history. So bringing those to live action, like The Little Mermaid, we just cast an African-American girl to play Ariel. And there was an uproar about that because she's not the Caucasian red-haired girl that we know from the cartoon. And, you know, you kind of have to tell people, like, first of all, mermaids are not real. Second of all, you know, who's to say that, you know, we can't create a different world and tell the same story and include, you know, different races, different genders and ethnicities into these roles. And it came down to, you know, they saw thousands of girls to play Ariel, and they just couldn't find someone that could sing, that could act, and that had just had that kind of star quality. So when we cast her, you know, it was really taking a chance, and, you know, it might have pissed off a lot of people, but I think that we're breaking these stereotypes and these boundaries that are needed you know, to continue evolving, because either way, no one's going to be happy. I feel like you can create, you know, a carbon copy of the original Cinderella and someone will find something that they don't like about it. So I really admire the executives for making those decisions and being as inclusive as possible. I think especially with the climate, you know, these past couple of years, it's like time's up. It's like we need to start thinking outside of the box a little bit more.
It seems like it would be really challenging doing a remake of an older film, particularly because back when that film was made, morals and expectations were totally different, and some of them were very bad in their approach to people of color, women, children, you know, almost anything. So it's a challenge when you have to remake that and bring it up to date and make it not so offensive.
Yeah, it's tough to make something that's so concrete in everyone's mind as like fresh and new. You know, there's I'm very happy that times have changed to where, you know, we have to make those changes to be more inclusive and less divisive, but it's a challenge. It's definitely a challenge. And I think it's one that has been fun. It's been really interesting to kind of see these different roles in these different films from perspectives of people that you wouldn't normally see them out of.
Yeah, I'm thinking about that 1950s film of Around the World in 80 Days.
Blockbuster.
They cast Shirley MacLaine as an Asian woman.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just seems so crazy. I mean, you see instances of that where there's plenty of Asian actors and they just don't do it. They want to go for, you know, I guess for the big star. But now you're starting to have a lot more diversity just in general, right?
Yeah. And it's crazy that, you know, back then that they would do that. Like if we were to do that today, we would get so much trouble. you know, but luckily there's so much talent in every kind of walk of life. You know, in our database here, we have lists of Hispanic actors, Asian actors, African American, you know, people with accents, and we have them kind of grouped so we can, you know, go when we are looking for what we need, we can find it. But, you know, and who's not to say that, you know, a predominantly, you know, like for one role we did, we were casting a nurse. And when I think of nurse, or like my first thought is a female, but my boss was like, no, we're going to cast a male nurse. And I was like, okay, like there's in real life, there are male nurses. There's tons of them. But, you know, we get so fixated, you know, or like the a female stewardess, or, you know, if it's a male, it has to be, or if it's a doctor, it has to be a male, and stuff like that, that's kind of ingrained in our heads. So going through our daily tasks and trying to break out of that it's a challenge, but it's fun.
You mentioned people with accents, and that must be a challenge when you have someone is just they have the perfect look, they're really good actors, they have a strange accent. Have you had to cope with that, and how?
Yeah, so luckily, a lot of people that do have very strong accents, an American accent, from what I've heard, is very easy to do. I don't know how, but it's so cool. You'll have like a British gentleman with a really thick British accent, and then he can easily start doing an American accent by just changing a few words or drawing out, you know, talking with more drawl in his voice. We've also had dialect coaches come to set. Like if we find someone that's perfect for a role and they can't, you know, their voice doesn't match right, we'll actually hire someone to kind of coach them through.
Well, speaking of voice, working for Disney, do you have opportunities to cast like voice for animation?
Yeah, I'm actually working on that right now. We are doing several projects, and the way we do it is, you know, my boss will essentially give me a list of actors, and I'll get on YouTube and I'll find voice clips of them from either interviews or from movies. And what we do is we match them to the artwork of the character. So say you have a gorilla And then you want to see Brad Pitt, Johnny Depp, Sam Rockwell. I'm the person that gets that picture of the gorilla and finds these interviews and, you know, puts their voices to it to see, like, does Sam Rockwell sound like a gorilla or not? Which is, it sounds very silly, but it works. And it's another way that we try to envision more creatively what it'll look like on the screen.
Do actors have any issues with doing voice, like strictly voice?
Not that I've noticed. I think that a lot of actors prefer it because they can essentially, you know, be in and out in less than a day for the whole thing and still get paid as if they were on set for, for 30 days. It's, you know, they can record from home if they have the correct setup. They can just go to the studio for a day. I've never seen someone turn down a voice role yet. I think if they were ever to turn it down, it would probably just be based off of maybe the character. There's rarely ever a time conflict or a schedule conflict when it comes to voiceover, since it can be done remotely.
Yeah, I've seen some, especially cartoon work, where they've had, you know, fairly well-known actors and actresses in doing the voiceovers, and there's some that have been doing it remotely for quite some time. The Archer series that features a lot of well-known voice actors has been doing that. And, do you think that is perhaps some of the future of some production?
I think so. I think that, you know, I've seen it leaning over a lot towards voiceover and animation because it's more cost effective than having, you know, a whole production there. I think that as I've seen a lot of actors that, you know, as they get older and as they have children, their agents are actively seeking those roles. They're actively seeking the cartoons and the more family friendly. And they're like, they want their kids to see them in those, you know, family roles versus, like, you know, a super violent action film. So definitely.
I've always sort of wondered how that works. Do they do the animation first and then they sort of have to match their voice, their phrasings to the movements in the animation?
I believe it's an ever-going kind of like combination of both. I've seen they'll have the animation and kind of a very rough edit of the animation, and then they'll have them record and they'll try to match it based off the recording. And then sometimes we'll have to re-record based on the animator's needs. So it's kind of a back and forth process. I wish it was as easy as, you know, just record all this and then we'll animate all this and we'll just put it together. But it's a lot of correspondence and back and forth between the two.
So have you had many situations where you met somebody that you always wanted to meet, you know, an actor or actress?
Yes. My second week at Disney, I was at my desk and I had all of these papers in my hand and I'm like sorting them. And he was like an angel. Ryan Gosling walks by my desk. He smiles at me and says, good morning. And it was so unexpected. I dropped all the papers that I had all over the floor. And I'm like, oh my God, I would turn bright red. He was like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. Ryan got down. He was helping me pick them up. He's like, it's Monday. I understand. And I was just like, no, it's not Monday. It's you. It's the fact that you're in front of me. That was probably the most exciting day at work for me. I could not, you know, get the smile off my face that day. But, you know, it's crazy. You know, working at Disney, it's a revolving door of talent. And, you know, I was at lunch once and the Jonas Brothers were just like in the cafeteria, like getting food. It's a different world out there. But Ryan Gosling.
They got to be nice to you because you may stand between them and a job they want.
Yeah, I guess you could say it that way. But It's fun. You know, and even just living in LA, you can be at the grocery store, and I've seen Adam Scott, I've seen Paris Hilton, Steve Carell at the grocery store. It's just, it's that's not something you would generally see in Austin, Texas, but
every now and then it'll happen. I've had a few of those moments. Let's see, I was shopping at Whole Foods one time and looked up and Ashley Judd was standing shopping. Yeah.
It's awesome.
We really appreciate you joining us today and having this great discussion. I mean, I've always wondered about casting and how it works.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much for having me. I had a lot of fun. You know, I don't really, my friends really don't care about my job, and I love my job. So it's been nice to be able to talk to someone that, you know, enjoys the industry and appreciates it as well. So thank you guys.
Well, Scoop and I are both big movie fans.
Yeah. When you start casting a podcasting movie, give us a call.
Yeah, we're ready.
That's a good idea. I'm going to bring that to the boss. What credit you
All get. Right. Well, thanks again.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys.
You can follow the Plutopia News Network at plutopia.io. On Facebook, go to @PlutopiaNews. On Twitter, it's @Plutopia. With John Lepkoski, I'm Scoop Sweeney. This is the Plutopia News Network, 20 minutes into the future.